Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Girila Maharaj ki, Janitai Go Premanande. Yep.
You know the little duty there, Giriraj Maharaj and Radha Giriraj Maharaj, the little duty that was is that Radharani, she is from Govardhan Hill.
Is it a Radharani, Sheila?
I mean, the dish are like Radharani.
Is it Radha Krishna?
I think so.
Ask Achintyarupa Maharaji to see what she says. Achintyarupa. Okay. So tonight we'll begin chapter 61. What is chapter 61 called? Lord Balaram slays Rukmini, the brother of Rukmini. So that will be later in the chapter. Tonight we'll just read about Krishna's family members. We'll go to verses 1 to 19. Shukadeva Goswami said, each of Lord Krishna's wives gave birth to 10 sons, who were not less than their father, having all his personal opulence.
Lord Krishna had 16,108 wives, and thus this verse indicates that Lord God 16,118 sons.
1 lakh children.
Yeah. Okay. So what are the points? Krishna has 10 sons by each queen. So there's 161,080 children. So only a very, very powerful person could do this. It has to be someone who is either God themselves or empowered by God to be able to do something of this magnitude. So Krishna has this many children. It describes that for each queen there was a palace. And it says that Dwarka Dham was floating in the ocean off the coast of Gujarat. So if you go to West India, and then in the ocean, Krishna created this city. Because the capital of the Yadus was Mathura. But then he transferred everyone across to Dwarka. And the whole place is floating on the ocean. So it's like an island that floats on the ocean. And it says that the circumference, it's like 96 miles in circumference. So it's a very large area. You know, it's probably like Greater Melbourne or something. You know, like Melbourne and many of the suburbs. That's kind of like Dwarka, floating in the ocean. But on top of all of that, Krishna had a separate palace for every single queen. So 16,108 queens. And it says that each palace was 4 square miles. Mm. So 2 square miles. So it means 4 square miles. So like a mile in diameter, mark 2 across. So it's like, you know, 4 square miles in each palace. So if there's 16,000 of these palaces within Dwarka, plus the extra palaces of Krishna's family members and
Yadus.
Yeah, the other Yadus and like that. All of that could not fit within the 96 square miles of Dwarka. So how does Krishna do all of this? That is called Achincha Shakti. Achincha Shakti means inconceivable power. God has inconceivable power. His power is beyond perception or conception. We can't understand how he does things. Even everything in this universe, right, is beyond understanding. Scientists cannot actually explain how everything operates. They always give ideas, oh, this happens and this happens. Like that. They don't actually know. There's a big push now on the Earth about the theory of the flat Earth. They're saying the Earth is flat. Okay. So there's a big push now, people are saying, that scientists are telling us that it's the Earth is round, no? But many people are saying, no, the Earth is actually flat. So there's arguments and debates, but they don't actually know. They can't work all of these things out. Right? The world is round. And there's so many planets and they're all moving simultaneously. So people say it is like this or it is like that. They don't actually know. So Krishna, by his potency, he can do inconceivable things. So he can fit all of these personalities. And then each queen has 10 sons. Right? That's 160,000 of his own children.
10 daughters, one each.
One daughter.
10 children, one daughter.
Who's the daughter?
Every queen has one daughter.
One daughter, like that. I've heard that, but where is that written?
From Bhagavatam.
In the Bhagavatam? Where? It's in there?
I read it in the summary.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to have a look. See what it says. I don't remember reading it, but so I have heard that, but I'm not sure. I'll have to read through and see where it says. So it says that he had all of these sons. So how is it possible that someone can have 160,000 children? And then how would you remember their names?
And their birthdays.
And their birthdays. So it would be... It's inconceivable that something can be this powerful, that Krishna can be this powerful. Even my grandmother had 4 sons, and she couldn't remember their names all the time. And she called them different names sometimes. So, having that many children, and even having this many children, and simultaneously, he's with every queen, simultaneously. Yeah? So there's very few personalities who can do this. Right? So it either has to be God or someone who's extremely powerful. You know, maybe Lord Shiva could do it, or right? Even Narad Muni can't do it. Can't do something like this. And we'll see as the past time goes on. But only a very powerful personality can do this. So this shows Krishna's inconceivable potency. And to understand the Bhagavatam, you have to understand this point, which was Lord Chaitanya's explanation of the philosophy of the Bhagavatam, Achintya Veda, Veda Tattva. Krishna is Achintya. And when you understand his Achintya, or inconceivable power, then you can understand Krishna to some degree. So, any points?
But there was one more thing. If he used to expand himself
and
he used to become so mean,
and then
when he used to go to his
Sudama.
He used to
become
one.
Yeah.
Nobody can do that.
Very few people can do it. Yeah, very few personal.
Expand and do it.
Yeah, 16,000 Krishnas come out of 16,000 palaces on chariots, and then they all head towards the Sudama assembly house, and as they all get close, they all begin to merge, and they get to the Sudama assembly house, and there's only one Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna goes in, performs his pastimes, governs Dwaraka, at the end of the day comes out, gets on the chariot, and as he goes back, he begins to expand into 16,108, and gets to his wife's home, the palace. So, the inconceivable power. Any point?
Krishna Maharaj was saying in this class on Sunday that Krishna is basically expanding 16,108 wives. This just goes to show that he's trying to please in each and every devotee, that he can have a personal relationship with you and expand, and you think he may be with you only. And now this is exactly the point Sankarsana Maharaj was saying here as well. Mm. So we should not think that, you know, Krishna won't be there for us. He'll be there personally present for us too as well.
Mm. Nice. Anything else?
Couldn't you please expand on that all his sons weren't inferior to him?
As it describes in this?
Yeah.
Yeah. It means that Prajumna is actually an Orion form. Prajumna is an expansion of Krishna. And the others, it doesn't specifically say, but they may be like expansions. They may have part of the potency of Krishna. So practically, Prajumna is like Vishnu Tattva. And maybe all the other sons are either Vishnu Tattva or they're very, very powerful also. So, any other point? Okay. Because of each of these princesses saw that Lord Achyutya never left her palace, each thought herself the Lord's favorite. These women did not understand the full truth about him. So, Raja, you like to read that?
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura notes that Lord Krishna would leave the palaces only with the permission of his wives, and thus each one considers herself his favorite.
Mm. So, any point?
He can please everybody.
Hmm. Good.
He's reciprocating their total devotion to him.
Yeah. Nice point. Any other point? So it describes that of all of Krishna's qualities, which is the greatest? Yeah, the quality of being Bhakta Vatsala. Vatsa means?
Deer.
Deer or calf, like an innocent animal. Vatsala. So Vatsalya Ras means the way the parent feels towards the child. That's how Krishna feels towards his devotee. Like they're a deer or a calf or a child. Because the devotee is dependent upon Krishna. And because the devotee is dependent and Krishna displays his mood of compassion towards them, he tries to look after everyone to the best of his ability. So this is the position of every devotee. Every devotee who has prema or love for Krishna attracts Krishna. And because Krishna is attracted, he gives himself fully to that devotee. So he treats them like a vatsa. Vatsa means like a calf. His dearest dependent. So with every single queen, he expanded. Because they had the desire to serve Krishna. So then he gives himself fully to each. He gives a palace to each queen. And then, after giving a palace to each queen, he personally stays with that queen. and he's with every other queen simultaneously, but they cannot understand that by the arrangement of Yogamaya. They think, I am the most fortunate because he's staying with me. Same thing took place in the Rasa Lila, when Krishna was dancing with the gopis. Then Krishna was with every single gopi. Some of the acharyas say that Krishna, there was one Krishna, but he was moving so quickly in between each gopi, it appeared that he was with every gopi simultaneously. And he was with every gopi simultaneously.
3 billion, did you?
Three billion, yeah. So he's with all the gopis, he's with all the queens simultaneously. Or in the Brahma Vimohana Lila, it describes that Krishna was sitting in the center of the cowherd boys while they were having a picnic. And every single cowherd boy felt that Krishna was looking directly at them.
And sharing his lunch.
Yeah. So every single cowherd boy felt that Krishna was personally reciprocating with them. And describes that when he, I was reading the other day, that he was walking amongst the cowherd boys when they were heading back to Nandagram at the end of the day. And they're walking back with all the cows and Krishna was walking. Every cowherd boy felt that Krishna was standing next to them, right, as they were walking back. So that was the... That is the position of Krishna. Yeah. Because he's bhakta vatsala, so he likes to please and reciprocate with his devotee. Yayatamam prapajanti. Come to the Pajamyaham. As you surrender to me, I record it. So the devotee has prema, love for Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates with every single devotee fully. Yeah. So he expands. Yeah. Because every devotee has love for him, then he expands to be with every single devotee. So here we see that Krishna fully satisfies every single queen in Dwarka. Any points?
He's also showing he's being the perfect husband to each queen. So he's showing he's taking his role perfectly, which he always does. He's perfect in every role he takes.
Good. Anything else?
Infinity of opulence. Infinite.
Yeah.
I've seen a painting of baby Krishna. No matter which direction you look at, Krishna always looks at you. If you move around the room, Krishna is still looking at you.
So it's 360 degrees.
Anything else? The Supreme Lord's wives were fully enchanted by his lovely lotus-like face, his long arms and large eyes, his loving glances imbued with laughter, and his charming talks with them. But with all their charms, these ladies could not conquer the mind of the all-powerful Lord. Mahatmarpur.
The previous verse stated that Lord Krishna's queens could not understand the truth of the Lord. That this truth is explained in the present verse. The Lord is all powerful, fully himself with infinite opulence.
So, any point? Yeah, they understood more fully because their love is more, there's a greater sense of sacrifice in the gopis' love than the queen's love. The love of the queens is called swakya. Swakya means wedded love. In conjugal love, Madhurya Ras. Madhurya Ras is considered to be the highest of the five rasas. So, within Madhurya Ras, conjugal love, there is Parakya Bhav and Swakya Bhav. Swakya, swa means one's own, ownership. They consider that Krishna belongs to them because it is married love. They are married to Krishna. So when you're married, there's a sense of
ownership.
And there's a sense of commitment. You have expectations which are placed upon the other person. So because the queens are married to Krishna, they expect that he will come home after he has been in the Sudama assembly house all day. No? There is an expectation he must arrive. Right? Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, if you read this section of the Krishna book, then Prabhupada writes that Krishna was a hen-pecked husband. Means the wives, some of the wives would control Krishna. All of them would control him, but some of them in particular would control Krishna. You have to be here at this particular time. You have to do this. You have to do like that. Now that's called swakya. So it is a sense of ownership which is there in the conjugal mood. But greater or more satisfying to Krishna is called parakya bhava. Parakya means the sense that there is no
social relationship.
Yeah, no social relationship. And there is no obligation which is there. Krishna is not obliged to be anywhere at a particular time with the gopis because they're not married. No. It is an unwedded love. It is out of wedlock. So therefore, when Krishna associates with the gopis, there is no guarantee that they will unite. Of course, they always unite by the arrangement of Yogamaya, but there's no guarantee. There are many obstacles in the way. Even there are pastimes where Krishna goes to visit Srimati Radharani in Jalat. And then he comes into the courtyard because Radharani cannot escape that night. So he comes into the courtyard and then he climbs the tree outside of her window. And when he gets up to the height of her window, he makes the sound like a cuckoo, a kokila, a cuckoo. So he makes the sound, and then Jatila, who is the mother-in-law of Srimati Radharani, she runs out into the courtyard, but she's quite blind. So she says, "I know it is you up there in the tree. I know it is not a cuckoo. You are just making this sound. Come down. We will beat you." So Krishna just has to stay up there all night. So Krishna is stuck up the tree all night. Radharani is in her room. Krishna is on the tree. And they cannot unite. But sometimes there are obstacles where they cannot come together. There is no guarantee of their union. That is called parakya. It is difficult for them to come together. So that is parakya bhava. That is greater than, that's why the love of the gopis is greater than the queens. Because they have to overcome obstacles to be with Krishna. So, basically it is saying here that with all their charms, these ladies could not conquer the mind of the all-powerful Lord. So he was conquered by them. Because there are verses here, if you go through this section, if you go back to chapter 53, there is a verse where Krishna himself says he cannot stop thinking of Rukmini throughout the night. And he is absorbed in her. He said he cannot sleep thinking of Rukmini. So there definitely is an attachment there. So then it says here in this verse that they cannot conquer the mind of the Lord. So what does that mean? Then we could take it that it means they could not fully conquer the mind of Krishna. Why can they not fully conquer? Because Krishna's mind is conquered only by one person. fully. Shrimati Radharani. She fully conquers Krishna's mind. So then in comparison to the love that Krishna feels for the gopis, then the love of the queens in Dwarka is not as great. So therefore he does not stay absorbed in them compared to the way he is absorbed. So even when he is in Dwarka, he's fully absorbed in the mood of thinking of the bridge buses. He's fully absorbed in thinking of Shrimati Radharani. And actually it describes that he goes back to visit Shrimati Radharani every single day that he's living in Mathura or Dwarka. He goes back and visits her. And in with the bridge buses, because they're always thinking of Krishna, Krishna actually manifests while they're thinking of him. So in one sense, there is no separation. So he is feeling intensely absorbed. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it describes that sometimes Krishna does not wake up in the morning. They say he has a headache and he does not get up. And everyone's very concerned. And in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it describes there's a conversation. And the devotees are outside Krishna's chambers, his room, and they're speaking about him. And at one point, Rukmini says, even when he is lying next to me at night time in our bed, still he is calling out the name of Hey Radhe, Hey Lalite, Hey Bishakhe. So he calls out to them continuously. And then Satchabhama, she corrects Rukmini and says, not only at night when he's asleep, but even when he's awake and he's sitting next to me, he daydreams. And then he begins to call out, Hey Radhe, Hey Lalite, Hey Bishakhe. So he's fully absorbed in his consciousness at all times. So when it says here that they cannot conquer the mind of the Lord, this is one way we can understand. Because of the potency of the love of Shrimati Radharani and the gopis. Any points?
The Yogamaya, I mean, she can change the mind of the Lord. She, and sometimes, you know, the past times, he forgets himself. So does it mean that she can convert his mind?
That means that she has the ability to make him forget things. You can explain it any way you want to explain it. So, up to you if you want to explain it like that or concern.
How would you change the mind of the Lord?
She makes him forget things.
Just forget things.
Yeah, forget things.
So. Did that verse also mean as well that because God is so fully satisfied, they and unlimited and inconceivable, could that also be another take on it?
No, or in one sense, but on another level then. To say that he is not conquered by Shrimati Radharani would not be a fair statement. So. It just depends on the level of devotion of the devotee. Any other point?
Sankarshan Maharaj was also cutting this lecture of one of the Bhagavatam class. One devotee asked him about some question about the prayers. And then Maharaj said that before praying to Krishna, we should pray before Radharani. And we should tell her that, can you please tell your Krishna something about me? We do some service, so we should pray to her that you please tell him something about me, and then only the things will go to him, and then only we can get the mercy. So we have to go to the mercy through Radha, and then only we can do something.
Yep. Any other point?
When he goes to each palace, does he go to his parents too?
Yeah, he goes to visit them.
I mean, is he there with them all the time?
No, I don't think so, because it's expected he'd be living with his wife, so. Okay. The arched eyebrows of these 16,000 queens enchantingly expressed those ladies' secret intentions through coyly, smiling, sidelong glances. Thus their eyebrows boldly sent forth conjugal messages. Yet even with these arrows of Cupid and with other means as well, they could not agitate Lord Krishna's senses. So it's an important point that Krishna's senses cannot be agitated by anything material. Our senses can be agitated by the material energy. We are attracted to the opposite sex. Whereas Krishna is not attracted by anything material. No? Whereas everyone here in this material world, they become attracted by material form. So Krishna is only attracted by the spiritual energy. The Bhagavatam says, if you go back into the earlier cantos, it says that even the strongest warriors, the Digvijays, the very powerful conquerors of all the directions on this planet, very powerful kings, when they enter in and they've conquered every man on the planet and the men fall down at their feet, but when they go into the inner chambers of their wives' bedrooms, then the wife, just by the movement of her eyebrow, she conquers him. And then he lays down and she can put her foot on his chest. The most powerful man in the universe, easily conquered by the eyebrows of the woman. No. The eyebrows of the woman are considered to be like the bows of Cupid, shooting arrows of lust, calm, into the consciousness or the heart of the man. And it bewilders the men. Whereas Krishna cannot be bewildered by any material woman. But he is bewildered by the feminine potency of his female consorts. Particularly Srimati Radharani, right? In particular. Right? So powerful is Radharani that she can completely conquer Krishna. So Krishna is known as Madan Mohan. So you know that story I've told you many times. That Narad Muni was approached by Cupid. And then Cupid said to Narada, he tried to attack him with an arrow. Narada said, "Why would you attack me?" He said, "I'm not difficult to affect with lust. But if you want to become particularly famous, you should try to shoot Krishna. If you can make him lusty, you'll become very famous." So he said, "Where is Krishna?" Narada said, "He's in Vrindavan." So he went to Vrindavan. And then he went to shoot Krishna with one of his arrows, but when he saw Krishna, he fainted on the ground. Krishna was so beautiful. So Krishna became known as Madan Mohan, one who bewilders Madan, Cupid. So then one time, Krishna was boasting towards the gopis, "I am very powerful wrestler." Krishna is a very good wrestler. And then Radharani said, "You are not so powerful. I could easily defeat you." Krishna said, "No, that is not possible." So they made an agreement. "We'll meet here tomorrow at this place and we'll have a wrestling match." So Krishna came dressed as a wrestler. And then all the gopis, they formed a wrestling arena. And then Radharani, she entered as a wrestler. So she tied her, she made like a dhoti, tied it up at the back, so it was like wrestler's gear, right? And her hair was in a top knot, right? And she had her veil covering her. And when she walked in, Krishna became completely captivated by Srimati Radharani. And then Radharani walked in, and then she lifted her veil so Krishna could just see her eyes, and she just looked at him out of the corner of her eyes. And when Krishna saw Radharani, he fell unconscious on the ground. And then Radharani just put her foot on his chest. So Krishna is known as Madan Mohan, but she is known as Madan Mohan
Mohini.
Means she conquered Krishna. Yeah. So she is even more powerful. Radharani controls Krishna. She is so powerful. Her love is so powerful. She controls him. She is the Hladini Shakti, the source of it. So here in this world, we have to be very careful of associating with the opposite sex. That's why it says here in the Bhagavatam. If you go all through the Bhagavatam, in the earlier cantos, it says you have to be very careful about dealing with the opposite sex. The men should not freely associate with the women should not freely associate with the men. If you want to associate, then you get married. Then you can associate as much as you want. And then you'll get a headache. Why are you laughing? What is funny about it? That if you associate too much with the opposite sex, then you'll simply become disturbed in consciousness. That is the nature of the material energy. Because we are trying to imitate Krishna. We're trying to imitate Radharani. We're trying to imitate. And when you imitate, because it is false, right, and you try to falsely be the enjoyer, it will end up being difficult. It will become durlabha, which means difficult. Whereas if we serve Krishna, and we see the husband and the wife as Krishna's servants, then the relationship will become very auspicious. So, any points? Okay. Thus these women obtained as their husband the master of the goddess of fortune. Although even great demigods like Brahma do not know how to approach him, with ever-increasing pleasure, they felt loving attraction for him, exchanged smiling glances with him, eagerly anticipated associating with him in ever-fresh intimacy, and enjoyed in many other ways. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu.
This text describes the intense conjugal affection the queens felt for Lord Krishna.
Any points? So how do we capture Krishna? How do we capture him? By love, by devotional service. But if you analyze that more deeply, what does it mean?
Fully surrender.
Fully surrender, but go even deeper. What does it mean? How will you captivate Krishna?
You love him completely.
Yeah, that's all the same answer. Devotional service, love him completely, surrender to him. It means you have to approach him in a particular mood.
Humility.
Yeah, humility, that's generic. But specifically, it means in a particular mood of devotion. All that is generic. That is general. That's the spirit. But it means you have to approach him in a particular mood of devotion. That means... Yeah, so it means you have to become raganuga. Anuga. Anuga means to follow. Yeah, so raga, ragatmika. Krishna's associates are ragatmika. Atmika means the soul. Their soul is full of rag. Rag means, the word actually means color. Like when you dye the cloth, you put the cloth, white cloth in the bucket and then you pull it out, it's all reddish. So it becomes, rag means color. So it means your consciousness has become completely full of a particular mood in serving Krishna. Then Krishna will become attracted to us. It has to be very specific. Ragatmika. You have to follow the Ragatmika devotees. All this is explained in the Upadeshamrita, the nectar of instruction. Right, if you go to the later verses, it says you have to follow a resonant of
Vrindavan.
Right? Jamuna Devi, Dasi, right? Who was, yeah, every morning we sing the Govindam prayers, the Brahma Samhita. So she once asked Prabhupada, it says in the nectar of instruction, we have to follow a resonant of Vrindavan. And she said, Prabhupada, are you that resonant of Vrindavan? And Prabhupada said, yes. So you have to follow a resonant of Vrindavan. But what was Prabhupada's internal bhava? What was his internal mood towards Krishna? That's what we have to follow. So when we're studying the Bhagavatam, we're meant to come to that point where we follow in a particular mood. So there are three principal moods, because Lord Chaitanya is teaching us Braja Bhakti. How to serve Krishna. Just like when we do deity worship, we chant one mantra to the Guru, Sri Guru, Paramananda, Premananda, Phalaprada, Brajananda, Pradananda, Sevayam, Ma Niyojaya. You chant that mantra? You do deity worship? You know that mantra? This is a mantra we chant when we begin our deity worship. Sri Guru, Paramananda, Premananda, Phalaprada. Paramananda means the topmost bliss. Specifically, this means the bliss of the resonance of Vrindavan. Because Lord Chaitanya was absorbed in the mood of the resonance of Vrindavan. And he came to give devotion in that particular mood. Now, his principal follower was Rupa Goswami. We are Rupa Nuga Vaishnava. So we're meant to be following the resonance of Vrindavan, the mood of the resonance of Vrindavan. So Paramana means the topmost bliss. The Guru is giving you the topmost bliss. What is the topmost bliss? What is the highest bliss of the soul? Yeah, Prema, but specifically. Love for God, that's generic, yeah. But specifically, what's the highest bliss of the soul?
Pleasing Krishna.
Yeah, that's generic. But when we're pleasing Krishna in our particular, from our mood of sthayi bhava, means that our particular rasa, who are we in Krishna's eternal service? That's the highest bliss when we act in that capacity. Right? When you understand who you are in Krishna's service and then you begin to serve him in that mood. That's the highest bliss. That's what the Guru is giving us. Paramananda. Premananda. Right? The bliss of love. Right? Phalaprada. He's giving you that fruit. Brajananda. The bliss of Braj. The Guru is giving you the bliss of Braj. Pradananda. He's giving you that ananda. Sevayam. Mani Yojiya. Seva means service. The Guru is giving us service. In the beginning, it is just serve ISKCON, serve the Hare Krishna movement by spreading the Sankirtan movement. But by serving and spreading the Sankirtan movement year after year after year, then gradually you will become purified and then you will develop the mood to serve Krishna in a particular way. That will become uncovered. That is the qualification. The qualification is developing the mood of selflessness by preaching. And then that uncovers your actual mood in service to Krishna. So specifically, we have to approach Krishna in a particular mood. Otherwise, you won't captivate Krishna. If you go to Krishna right now, and then Radha Vallabha begins to talk to you and says, what can I do for you? They say, I want to serve you. And how do you want to serve me? So you have to have that mood ready. Then you can enter the pastimes. Otherwise you won't know what to do. You won't know how to serve. Do you want to serve as a cowherd boy? Do you want to serve as a gopi, a lover of Krishna? Do you want to serve as a manjari, right, an assistant to the gopis? Do you want to serve as in Vatsalya Ras, as one of the elderly gopis or gopis? What mood do we want to approach Krishna? So this is what the 10th canto is about. Right? Now maybe we're not on that level now, but we have to very clearly understand that's what we're cultivating. And we have to aspire to cultivate that. If you don't aspire for that, it will never come. If you don't have any desire to understand who you are in Krishna's service, it will never manifest. So you have to cultivate that desire. That's what Lord Chaitanya came to teach us. Because there are two ways of understanding it. One is the guru gives it to you, which is called Siddha Pranali, which usually we speak about that as a Prakrita Sahajya practice. But there's also a bona fide way of doing that too. Lord Chaitanya actually established that. But the other way is by revelation, which is the mood that we follow, which is you serve and serve and serve, and then gradually it becomes revealed to you as you become more qualified. But we should understand very clearly that is our goal. So, any points?
So you are saying that we have to know our swarup.
What's that?
We have to know our swarup.
Yeah. One day you do. Any other point?
And that is style.
Yeah. Okay.
So sorry, one more thing.
Yep.
So the queens are completely happy because they're serving in the exact position they belong.
Yeah, they're eternal associates. Do they know what?
That they are his eternal associates.
Do they know he's that they are his eternal associates? In other words, did they pass the Bhakti Vedanta course?
No.
In other words, did they study the 10th canto? No, but they studied the 10th canto, and then while they were reading it, they thought, oh, wait a minute.
I'm Chandra.
That's me. Oh, I should go and serve Krishna now. Oh, I'm his queen. I should go and serve him. Huh? And then when they get to Krishna, what will Krishna say? What was your score in the course? And then they'll say to Krishna, I got 78%. And Krishna said, okay, go back. Go back to Melbourne, study. No, Krishna will not say that because they're eternal associates of Krishna, nitya siddha. They never fall down. We've all fallen down. We've all left our service. We used to serve Krishna, but now we've left. Now we have to go back to serving Krishna again. But all of these personalities, all the queens, they always serve Krishna. They never left that service. So they're just fully absorbed. That's all they know.
Yoga Maya does, she makes them forget to us, you know, that, I mean, they want to serve, but they don't know that he is eternal associate.
No, they're just serving, they're his queens. In Dwarka, the queens, the Madhurya is mixed with Aishwarya. So they have some concept that he is God also. In Vrindavan, the Madhurya is pure.
Yeah.
So they don't become conscious of his supreme position. Okay. Any other point? Okay. Although the Supreme Lord's queens each had hundreds of maidservants, they chose to personally serve him, serve the Lord, by approaching him humbly, offering him a seat, worshipping him with excellent paraphernalia, bathing and massaging his feet, giving him pan to chew, fanning him, anointing him with fragrant sandalwood paste, adorning him with flower garlands, dressing his hair, arranging his bed, bathing him, and presenting him with various gifts. So this particular verse is very similar to two of the verses that have already been discussed in this last 10 chapters or so. Two verses are very similar. You've heard this verse. It almost sounds exactly the same. Yeah. So it points out that the Shukadev Goswami is feeling great ecstasy. Hands up if you're feeling great ecstasy while you're studying this section of the Bhagavatam. Yeah, two or three devotees, so they are. So the rest of you, you should start feeling something. You should be feeling great ecstasy. If you're reading this now and you're not feeling great ecstasy, there's something wrong with you. Seriously, there is something wrong with you. It means your practice of sadhana is not correct. Because if you are studying this and you're not feeling blissful and ecstatic from studying this, this means you're too much absorbed in the material energy. And as long as you're absorbed in the material energy, you can't understand these things. So you have to come out of this. It means you're too much identifying with your worldly identification. And it's a problem all of us have. You know, me included. It's a problem we have. We're too much absorbed in the material energy and identifying with our temporary position in this material world. As long as you absorb yourself in that, you can't understand these pastimes properly. We should be feeling very blissful. If you chant the holy name of Krishna, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, right, and you do not feel great ecstasy and bliss while chanting, there's something wrong with your chanting. It means you're not chanting properly. So Shukadev Goswami is in so much bliss, he's repeating himself. He said this verse before, but now he's virtually repeating it again. Because he's absorbing himself in the mood of the queens. Right? Now, what are some of the points that we learn from the devotion of the queens? Right? Two things which stand out in this verse. The first thing is that they personally do the service for Krishna. They don't get someone else to do it. We should do the service. Not that we get someone else, or you can do the service. No, we want to serve Krishna directly. We want to do service for Krishna. And then the second point is, they always offer the best to Krishna. You have to offer the best to the deity. Whatever the best thing is in your possession, you should offer that to Krishna. It says in Nectar of Devotion, you should offer something that is very dear to you, to Krishna. Just like your Purushottam must just passed. So I was just having prasadam with some devotees. So that devotee, he told me, the whole Purushottam must, I didn't have any sugar, anything deep fried, no paneer. Hands up if you like paneer. Or you like deep fried, or you like sugar. Well, we all like it, right? But then you sacrifice something that you like for Krishna. For 1 month, I will not take it. No, that's a sacrifice. That's a way of showing Krishna that you appreciate. So you offer something which is valuable to you, you offer that to Krishna. So we should do like that. So the queens are offering that kind of devotion. Any points?
Does it also give us the things we could offer the deity and do for the deity?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a list? It's like also a list of the things we can offer the deity.
Yeah, a partial list. Yeah, these are things that we can offer. Okay. Among Lord Krishna's wives, each of whom had 10 sons, I previously mentioned 8 principal queens. I shall now recite for you the names of those 8 queens' sons, headed by Prajumna. So Prajumna was the first son. He was the son of
Rukmini.
He was the eldest. Now we'll hear about the 8 principal queens and their 10 sons. So all of this will be on your exam. So you have to memorize this. Okay. The first son of Queen Rukmini was Pradyumna. And also born of her were Charudeshna, Sudeshna, and the powerful Charudeha, along with Sucharu, Charugupta, Bhadracharu, Charuchandra, Vicharu, and Charu, the 10th. None of these sons of Lord Hari was less than his father. So if you're looking for names to name your kids.
What is the meaning of Charu?
What is the meaning of Charu? Who knows?
Very dear.
What is it?
Very dear.
Very dear? Charu? Okay. Very dear. The 10 sons of Satyabhama were Banu, Subanu, Swabanu, Prabanu, Banuman, Chandrabanu, Brihadbanu, Atibanu, the 8th, Sribanu, and Pratibanu. Samba, Sumitra, Purujit, Shatajit, Sahasrajit, Vijay, Chitraketu, Vasuman, Dravida, and Kratu were the sons of Jambavati. These 10, headed by Samba, were their father's favorites. Srila Jiva Goswami translates the compound Pitri Samata in this verse as highly regarded by their father. The word also indicates that these sons, like the others already mentioned, were regarded as being just like their glorious father, Lord Krishna. The sons of Nagnajiti were Vira, Chandra, Ashwasena, Chitragu, Vegavan, Vrisha, Ama, Shanku, Vasu, and the opulent Kunti. Shruta, Kavi, Vrisha, Vira, Subahu, Bhadra, Shanti, Darsha, and Purnamasa were the sons of Kalindi. Her youngest son was Somaka. Madra's sons were Pragosha, Gatravan, Simha, Bala, Prabala, Urdaga, Mahashakti, Saha, Oja, and Aparajita. Madra is also another name of Lakshmana. Mitravinda's sons were Vrika, Harsha, Anila, Ridwa, Vardhana, Unnada, Mahamsa, Pavana, Vani, and Shuddhi. Sangramajit, Brihatsena, Shura, Praharana, Arijit, Jaya, and Subhadra were the sons of Bhadra, together with Vama, Ayur, and Satyaka. Deeptiman, Tamratapta, and others were the sons of Lord Krishna and Rohini. Lord Krishna's son Pradyumna fathered the greatly powerful Aniruddha in the womb of Rukmavati, the daughter of Rukmi. O king, this took place while they were living in the city of Bhoja Katta. So we'll hear more about this later in the chapter. My dear king, the sons and grandsons of Lord Krishna's children numbered in the tens of millions. 16,000 mothers gave rise to this dynasty. So, any points?
The 10 that were his favorites, were they whose sons were they?
Jambavati.
Why were they his favorites?
No idea.
Thank you.
Any other points? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Jai.